So we start this week, not with an email.
Oh.
No, but with a congratulations.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, Luke. Let's give a little round of applause. Well
done. On his
10th
birthday. No, yeah. He's engaged.
Luke is engaged. He's an old man now. He's grown.
I am an adult.
How
making
do you feel?
Commitments.
How much older do you feel?
Honestly, I feel like it was like a proper change. It was like, oh my gosh, I am now an adult, I guess.
This is happening.
Like, I was always waiting when I turned 18, when I went to university, when I moved out, when I, everything. I was like, when am I going to be an adult? This is pretty much it.
This is a big thing.
I think I'm an adult now.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad.
Thanks.
Aww.
Great.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Okay. Would you like to hear an email now?
Sure.
Sure.
I wouldn't usually read one out, but I've got a really nice one. This one is...
Bullshit, would you not usually read one out?
I wouldn't usually read one out after
one of my...
When
have you not read one out?
After one of my friends got engaged.
Okay.
But anyway, this one was too good to pass out.
Corey was actually at the engagement, and immediately after she said, I will, he read an email out.
I did. Yeah, it was an email from her,
Samantha.
Actually.
It said no.
If Luke asks me to marry him, I'll say yes, even though I mean no.
Oh.
Yeah. So this title is Bonding with My Physics Teacher. Hey guys, my name is Alex. I just wanted to let you know that me and my physics teacher love your podcast. Andy, my physics teacher, had informed us on Thursday that we were going to be learning about particle physics in Friday's lesson.
Ooh.
Yes. So that night, I went home and re-listened to Luke's time-traveling twins episode.
Woo! Yeah. Woo!
The best one, to prepare my brain for the confusion. When I came to class on Friday morning, I started telling Andy about the hilarious podcast I'd listened to about quantum physics and telling him what I'd learned. Midway through my story, Andy's face lit up and he just said, "Holy shot. You listen to the Sci Guys as well?"
Whoa!
Whoa!
What? Exciting!
We have a teacher listening
to
us.
That makes me too nervous.
Hello, Andy.
Hi, Andy.
Hi, Andy.
I hope my science is not too disappointing for you.
It freaks me out every time there's someone who's actually like in the field of science emailing in, or we find out someone who's in the field is like listening to us.
So excited.
I get just really uncomfortable. Like, I need to be better, you know?
Nah, you don't.
Eh.
You're already great.
You're already
Thank
fine.
You. We then proceeded to talk about your podcast for the next 10 minutes instead of actually learning about particle physics. Just thought you guys might enjoy this story. We did.
Wow.
We've hindered someone's education.
Thanks for making me laugh every week and helping my physics teacher to bond.
Well, on that
so
gigantic dopamine and serotonin rush,
and
should we start the show?
Welcome to Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutford.
Hello.
Hi.
This week, we'll be talking about Fortnite and free-range rats.
Fortnite? Wow, the 8-year-old boys and Evan are listening now.
Exclusively 8-year-olds and 28-year-olds.
Addiction is a terrible thing. We've seen the public view of it start to change from a character flaw to more of a disease in the past few decades. In the 70s, Bruce Alexander decided to test a new model of addiction using happy rats. This is the story of Rat Park.
This is like the rats.
The story of what?
Rat Park.
Rat Park.
Rat Park.
Are you going to talk about the Vietnam War as well?
I've got a brief mention of the Vietnam War.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I know where we're going then. Exciting.
To I absolutely do not. What is Rat Park?
Rat Park is a place where you make loads of little rats really happy.
It's yeah, too happy.
It's like rat heaven.
It's not. Okay. It's not a game. We're talking about addiction.
It's not a game. We're talking about addiction.
I'm so confused.
That's my favorite quote.
Seeing as you're confused, why don't we start off by describing what addiction is? No,
it's time consuming.
Yes, it is.
Correct.
Luke, do you know what addiction is?
Well, I would say it is a behavior pattern that is compulsive, that forces you to redo a thing over and over again against your will. Something like that.
For the sake of...
Well, it depends what you're addicted to.
Yeah. A hit of dopamine.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah. I mean, fundamentally, that is what it is.
Cool.
High
five, we collaborated.
Yay!
So yeah, addiction is described as not having control over doing, taking, or using something to the point where it could be harmful to you. So that was a pretty good...
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good definition there, Luke. Good job.
And is it always dopaminergic?
Everything I found is... I mean, realistically, what Luke means by dopaminergic
Dopaminergic?
Is it triggers the release of dopamine in your brain.
Which is the reward response.
Yes,
to make
which
you do
makes you happy
more.
And mm-hmm. do things better. Mm-hmm. So that you will get sense. A rush of dopamine, say, when you have a nice piece of fruit, or when you win a video game, or, I don't know, when you get scratch that itch. Ooh. Ooh, that's good.
That could mean so many things.
Like addiction.
Yeah.
So yeah, according to the charity Action on Addiction, 1 in 3 people are addicted to something. I don't know what that something is, but they're addicted to it.
I'm addicted to my phone.
I was thinking this,
but I don't, internet addiction is on here, but I don't think using your phone is necessarily an addiction because it's now just a fundamental part of society. Like, you use your car every day.
No, but I mean, like, I have a compulsion where I will get my phone out and I've not even realized I've got it out. Like, not to come back to my engagement again, but Rebecca literally had a nightmare where we went to pick rings together and she turned around and I was on my phone.
No.
That's an actual nightmare she had.
I also realized that about myself. And so for the whole month of November, I realized it was always social media. Whenever I was bored or I had a free moment, I just opened Twitter mm-hmm. without thinking about it or mm-hmm. open Instagram. And so I just quit. I just deleted all my social media for November.
I would say that is social media addiction.
Oh, social media.
Right. Addiction to the device is not maybe the thing. Yeah, it's addiction to the platform.
I think that it's important to draw a distinction between using your phone a lot and using social media a lot, because obviously that's your job and in some ways a big part of our lives.
I'm not like addicted to ringing my mum.
No.
Or like the sending menu.
Hello, mom.
I can't stop ordering Ubers.
Have you seen that meme with all of
the pills on? And it's got like Photoshop on a pill. It's like, what's your addiction? I'm addicted to Photoshop.
But yeah, I think a key part of addiction is that it's got to be detrimental. I mean, you can't really say you're addicted to the gym if you're going.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I'm addicted to
often.
Eating.
Until it becomes something that's actually detrimental to your life.
Well, I don't think that's true. I think it could be a negative thing to be addicted to the gym, especially if you're underweight.
No, I'm saying that you can't say that you're addicted to the gym until it becomes detrimental.
Oh, okay, right, fine.
No, you can absolutely be addicted to...
Okay, yeah.
Do you get what I mean?
I get what you mean. But
doing
there are people who are like super built and super like who have loads of free time who could get addicted to the gym from a body dysmorphia perspective, where it's not actually having a negative effect on their life, but it's still like something they can't control.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, all of the definitions I've read have kind of, they've had a really hard rule of it's got to be something
okay.
harmful.
So you wouldn't, for example, say we're all addicted to water because it's always a good thing to drink water unless you drown.
Yeah, it's hard to be addicted to water because it's hard for that to be a bad thing.
Sure, okay.
Yeah. So yeah, as I said, addiction is commonly associated with gambling, drugs, alcohol, and nicotine, which is a drug. But it's possible to be addicted to pretty much anything. Social media, mm-hmm. video games, even pulling hairs out.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Trichotillomania.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
That's the word.
Absolutely, yeah. You can be addicted to anything that triggers that response in your brain that says, that's good, keep on doing that thing. Mm.
And does pulling your hair out do that?
It can.
It can do.
Right.
You can get a satisfying feeling. Like,
I've felt that satisfying feeling from pulling a hair out before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's this one, there's this one really white hair on my arm that grows every now and then. And there's nothing more satisfying than just pulling it out. Dumbledore has many white hairs, Luke. And not a single one on his arm.
Thank God he's not addicted
Dumbledore
to pulling out white hairs.
Maybe he is. That's the... Yeah, so what can you be addicted to? Work is one of the things. So some people get obsessed with their work and they don't stop working.
Workaholic.
Yes, workaholics. Yeah. An interesting thing about aholics.
Yeah, it's
it bothers
dumb.
Me.
Yeah, it's dumb.
It's dumb because the word alcoholic comes from the word alcohol. So it should just be a workick.
A workick.
Workick. I'm a workick.
You're not a chocoholic. You're a chockick.
Chockick. Right. I'm a shopic.
A shopping, yeah. So shopping isn't...
Shopping's another one. Spending.
Shopping is another one.
Or as we call it, retail therapy.
Shopping.
Shopping.
Obviously, you can be addicted to drugs as well.
Drugic.
Drugic.
You could be addicted to Psy Guys and be psychic.
Oh! Except where's the C come from? The other C, the K.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Let me have my moment.
Psychic.
You could be psychic.
Psychic.
So drug addiction is considered a disease now. It impacts the brain circuitry and behavior, and it's classified by an inability to control drug use.
Right,
so,
okay.
Interestingly, it's only really illegal drugs because people are addicted to caffeine. Most people, you know, will probably be addicted to caffeine, but that's not classified as a drug addiction.
Are they addicted to caffeine?
Oh, 100% yes.
Is it not just that they've messed up their circadian rhythm so much that they require caffeine?
Well, so if you have enough caffeine, you start feeling withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah.
So another key part of drug addiction is withdrawal symptoms. So you can go one day without having caffeine, and you'll start to feel the withdrawal symptoms straight away.
What are they? Because I'm convinced I was addicted to caffeine in high school.
You almost certainly were. So shaking could be one, irritability, anything where someone is just being a bit of a pain, really.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Caffeine is really easy to get addicted to. You can have caffeine for a few days and then feel like you need to keep it up. Also, the more caffeine you have, the less effective it is. So the more you need.
So the more you need.
Yeah, so you find
people noticed that. I went from having like one coffee a morning to two.
Mm-hmm. So you, and the thing is as well, it's really bad for anxiety and other like sort of mental illnesses. Caffeine is just not a good drug, but I get
shaky and anxious if I didn't have a coffee in the morning.
Yeah.
When
and then
school,
if you have too much coffee, you get shaky and anxious. So there's this happy medium in between, you know, both of those extremes. So drugs can obviously be more or less addictive, and a more addictive drug is one that acts on your brain to stimulate the reward center better than other drugs.
Like heroin.
Yes, like heroin. Heroin's a very, very addictive drug. It's very good at making you want to do it.
The reason why I mention heroin is because I read this Reddit post once. There was this guy basically saying, "Hi, so I would like to tell you the story about how you cannot and should not ever try heroin." Like, I know that seems obvious to most people. But basically, he was saying...
But like, not even once.
Yeah. Yes. That's the key thing. Is like, he was saying, look, I'd never really like smoked weed or like got massively drunk in my life. Mm-hmm. And I was in the park one day and this guy would just like offered me heroin. And I was like, YOLO, right? And so he got heroin off this guy and he injected it. And he then had a heroin addiction for like 2 or 3 years. From one exposure. Now, Corey is going to tell us a story which sort of slightly changes the view on that and suggests that that is maybe that he had other aspects in his life that led to that heroin addiction.
Yeah.
But it is like a massive cautionary tale for anybody who like tries stuff and just is a little bit curious. Maybe stick away from the heroin and the meth because those are the ones that really ruin lives.
Pull you in straight away.
And I'm sure Corey won't go as far as to say, well... You know, the science says these things about addiction, so why not try heroin once? No.
I was actually about to say, despite what you may hear in the remainder of this podcast, don't try heroin and don't try meth. Just stay away from them.
I think so.
Please, dear God, stay away from heroin and meth.
That's the way I live my life. I wake up each morning and I see the words, don't try heroin and don't try meth, which I painted onto my ceiling.
Tattooed on the inside of your eyes.
Whenever I'm feeling sad, I tell myself, don't do heroin.
Yeah, so interestingly, a lot of people have tried heroin.
I'm sure they have.
Well, not exactly heroin. Well, morphine.
I'm shocked.
A lot of them. Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah, which is
what?
Legal heroin.
Really?
And, yeah, so morphine is the same.
I didn't know that.
It's very similar. It's basically the same drug as heroin, but it's also a lot stronger than street heroin.
Oh.
Because drug dealers don't want to give you pure stuff. Because that means they make less money. So they obviously cut it with a lot of different things. So anything you get from the doctors or in the hospital is going to be...
The good shit.
Ooh, it's pure.
Also, codeine, I believe, is metabolized into essentially morphine in the body. So like codeine is like... It's not, they're not giving you morphine, but the body just goes, thanks for
morphine,
the codeine. I'm going to make some morphine, which is basically heroin.
Thanks for this. I don't need it, but I'm going to do this.
You're going to turn it into heroin.
You can give a man some heroin... And he'll be high for a day. But teach a man's body to heroin. And he'll be high for a week.
The rest of his life.
Teach a man's body to heroin. Or woman's. They are, after all, a heroine.
Not if they're a drug addict, they're not.
You can be a heroin. What about somebody who is a heroin addict and saves a baby from falling from a building?
I guess they are then.
You are a very Ronald Reagan type of person. In fact, that's exactly what I was about to talk about.
The war on drugs.
Crazy thing, that isn't it? If you don't know what the war on drugs is, Luke is about to explain it to you right now.
So basically, in the Reagan era, they had this big panic where they went, okay, drugs are destroying part of the country. There's a lot of addiction going on. And also, it's bad for a generally productive and industrious society. So they made all drugs illegal, blanket-wise, without any thought about whether they were actually helpful or not. Not all drugs, sorry, like medical drugs were legal, but all drugs that people took recreationally, apart from alcohol, were basically just going, went no, absolutely not, which then had several effects. Firstly, it created a massive black market for these drugs. And secondly, it stopped medical research going in and looking at these drugs and seeing, are there actually any benefits to these? For example, like weed being used for I think multiple sclerosis, or like CBD oil now being a massive health thing and being beneficial for loads of people. And slightly on the side to that, it criminalized a bunch of poor, mostly black people and put them into prison where they worked for free and created a large amount of slave labor totally legally in America. That's the war on drugs in a nutshell.
Yay.
Anything I missed, Corey?
You didn't miss anything. You were pretty succinct. Yeah. One thing I would say is that the criminalization was one part of it. The other part of it was heavy, heavy policing on that criminalization. A lot of things are illegal, but drugs are super illegal. If you have even just a little bit of weed on you, you can go to jail.
Jail time.
Go to jail for a long time.
Well, but a lot of that depends on what
the color
you
of your
are
skin
and where you live.
Look, it's if you pass the paper bag test, then you're probably fine.
What's the paper bag test?
If you're darker than a paper bag.
Wow. That's fascinating and horribly sad.
Oh, that comes from nowhere. That's just
did you just make that up?
No, it's a colloquial thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a bunch of policemen walking around with a paper bag. Like a Dulux color chart, holding it up to you. One shade too dark, I'm afraid.
It's the paper bag to weed ratio. You can have X amount of weed so long as you're not too dark.
You know? Oh my god.
Weedness decreases with darkness.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, the war on drugs was an effort to curb America's growing drug problem. Didn't work. Didn't work at all.
Made it much worse.
Made it so much worse. They've got a massive opioid problem. An opioid is, from a poppy, so like heroin or morphine. Incredibly addictive drugs, as we've said, and also very easy to get a hold of medically.
But the most of the opioid addiction in America comes from them being prescribed legal opioids, then having the prescription taken away or the price increased so much they can't afford them anymore, and then them buying illegal opioids.
So that's exactly where I was about to go. Right. Yeah, so America will give them to you for free because you have a medical need for it. And then because, you know, healthcare in America isn't free or nationalized, they'll just decide that you can't have it anymore or you can't afford it.
I'll
so
you
bankrupt yourself buying it on the streets and completely destroy your lives.
Fascinatingly, by the way, as a little side note for the American healthcare joke going on at the moment and forever, it seems. I watched a film yesterday starring Vanessa Hudgens. It was a Christmas film. And in it, a man from, I think, like from the Viking era. No, not the Viking era. Like a knight from ye old England gets transported to modern day America, where Vanessa Hudgens then hits him with a car.
Is this a night before Christmas?
This is a night before Christmas. Vanessa Hudgens then hits him with a car. He is taken to hospital by a friendly policeman. And he is like given treatment and then just discharged from hospital. And Rebecca turned to me and was like, what about his healthcare? What about what's going on? And then the policeman's like, don't worry, I'll check on you guys later. Like, what policeman's got this much free time and free healthcare? Like, it's mad.
That's amazing.
They just left out the fact that absolutely would not happen.
Unless you were in Britain.
Unless you're in Britain, which Vanessa Hudgens and this knight were not.
He was with a $30,000. Fee right there.
Well, I mean, that's just for the policeman driving you there.
Yeah.
You know? Oh my lord!
The taxi service, the policeman.
No, you in America, you don't want people calling an ambulance for you. In fact, if you've got say epilepsy or something where you can have a fit fits often, you'll have a little bracelet or a necklace or something that says, "Don't call an ambulance for me because I'm fine." Yeah. Because if someone calls an ambulance for you, it doesn't matter whether you wanted it or not. If an ambulance is called and it comes for you, you have to pay about $10,000.
No, $2,000.
$2,000
maximum. So sometimes $800, sometimes $2,000, like different amounts. I once was in LA and had heat stroke, and it was cheaper for me to get a flight home to the UK and use the NHS than it was to just go to the hospital, which is just like so scary. Just so ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous.
Something I learned the other day is that when you give birth to your baby in the
hospital... When I give birth to my baby,
when
yes.
you, Corey, give birth to your baby, when someone gives birth to their baby in the hospital, they then hand you the baby.
And they charge you.
They charge you to hold your own baby.
Yeah,
skin-to-skin contact will cost you $40.
Yeah, you watched that Joe video as well.
Yeah,
but I made that.
No. But you're taking up valuable time that could be otherwise used for profiteering for the medical industry.
It's in the hospital's care.
It was in me.
No.
I just pooped it out.
It belongs to the baby room, so you have to rent it out from the baby room for $40.
Anyway, carry on.
America's a dystopia. Mm-hmm. Speaking of an American dystopia, do you know how they kind of came to that conclusion that led to the war on drugs?
No.
Drug bad.
Well, yes, drug bad, but drug bad because of bad experiment. On rats. So initially, the experiments done on rats involved rats being kept in a cage alone with walls between them so that they couldn't see each other or touch each other. They could only hear each other, and the only interaction they had was with the humans that came to give them food every day.
So they basically were doing like a prison simulation on rats.
Solitary confinement, yeah.
And then using that to conclude that people not in prison shouldn't be allowed to do what the heck they want with their body.
Absolutely. So the rats had two water bottles, one laced with heroin and one with just water. Now, they found that all of these rats tended towards the water with the heroin, and they would use that to the point that they overdosed and died.
Oh, lovely.
Yes. No, not lovely at all. But the thing about rats is that they don't do well with being alone. They're very social animals. They need to be with other rats. So if you separate them...
That's why you have to buy multiple.
Yeah, so I've got three rats because you can't have one.
One rat would just get too lonely.
Yeah, one rat would literally get too lonely. They can get schizophrenia and depression and then just die.
That's so sad.
Just from being raised alone.
We should make it illegal to own one rat.
Yeah, you know, they've recently made it illegal to own just one guinea pig.
Yeah, I know. In,
where was it? Sweden?
Sweden, I think.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty Swede. Anyway, yeah, so obviously there were issues with that initial experiment that concluded that effectively addiction is caused by drugs having a chemical hook that gets you addicted. Obviously, there were other variables that they didn't think of. Yeah, like your rats being mentally ill and trapped in prison. That might be something that changes how people act.
Might want to take a look at that.
That's a rather large variable than a bit of heroin and some water.
Imagine running a study on humans wherein you only study people that have been kept in solitary confinement for their entire lives. And then extrapolate that out to the entire human race.
Absolutely indicative of the general population.
This person is a crazy murderer. That must mean all humans are crazy murderers. It's absolutely ridiculous. So that's where Bruce Alexander comes in. Bruce K. Alexander was the inventor or creator of Rat Park.
Rat Park.
Yes.
Rat Heaven.
Rat Park. Well... Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, it is very heavenly.
Is it like Disneyland for rats?
Yes.
Yes. Well, without the rides.
Without rides. Just a place where rats are really happy.
Just a fun place. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So they weren't confined to a small cage. They had a very large space, enough for them to run around in, have sex, and eat and drink as much as they wanted.
That sounds delightful.
Do you know what? It really is delightful for a little rat, you know, just running around, having sex whenever you want.
Yeah.
It's great.
I'm so happy for them.
It's pretty much as close to a kind of sort of wild situation that you would really get with studying rats in captivity.
Yeah.
So in Rat Park, there were still two different types of dispensers. There were the heroin dispensers and there were the just normal water dispensers. I say heroin, morphine. They weren't going onto the streets picking up heroin from a dealer.
How were they getting the heroin?
It was morphine.
The guy down the street.
It was sweetened morphine. Yeah. So they did quite a few experiments on the rats, and initially they found out that rats were less likely to, you know, use the morphine if they were in rat park when compared to rats in cages.
Mm-hmm.
So rats kept in cages were having effectively higher rates of addiction than rats in rat park, which is interesting. It shows that in this case, if you don't have a rat kept in solitary confinement, it won't really be addicted to anything. But the really interesting part of this is when they took rats and...
out of rat hell and into rat heaven.
Yeah, so they took rats out of cages and put them into rat park.
So these rats were rats that had an addiction.
Yeah, so the rats were already addicted, and they were on the point of... They were kept there for about 57 days. So they were being led up to the point of just not eating and dying of an overdose. But when you put them in rat park, most of those rats actually turned out to be fine, normal functioning members of rat society, and weaned themselves off of the morphine.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it is quite nice, isn't it?
I guess because social interaction's a bit of a dopamine hit, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's like naturally, like if you can find places to get dopamine, or like, I mean, do you even need dopamine from a reward perspective if you've got serotonin? Like, I definitely feel like when I am super happy and like feel peaceful, I don't need the things that would, need things that would normally be dopaminergic.
On a small scale, I think you do need it. In terms of, you need to be made to eat and have sex.
Sure.
Those are all kind of healthy.
Depends what you're eating.
Healthy sources of dopamine.
You're sexing, I guess.
what they effectively found is that you could take a rat from rat park, put it into rat hell, and then move it back, and it would get over its addiction if it was, you know, surrounded by other happy rats. Effectively, with the right environment, the addiction rates are a lot lower, which is incredible. It's vastly different than those initial experiments.
So the key thing being there that the variable that was conducive with addiction was not the presence of morphine / heroin.
It was the isolation.
The variable was the environment in which you find yourself.
That's what Bruce Alexander took from it, obviously. But again, his study was not perfect. I'm not going to come out and say that environment is the only factor in addiction, because it very clearly isn't.
No. Yeah.
You could be addicted to anything that makes you happy.
But you can also be addicted to things, like there's a gut, you can be addicted to things that don't have that same trigger response in your brain. For example, there was that guy who was addicted to eating car parts. Like, that can't possibly... He literally ate cars. Like, he chopped them up and he ate them. And is that not
I mean, the thing is, I don't think that would then fall under the definition of addiction.
But it's
the
thing
call...
that he does compulsively that is negative. I mean, I think eating a car is probably negative.
My point being that people with OCD, you wouldn't say that they're addicted to their compulsions.
I mean...
just depends whether it's...
Your definition of addiction being... a thing that you can't control that is negative for you, that would cover things.
I mean, yeah, I suppose.
Like if you're like compulsively doing anything that is socially detrimental, then it would be.
The thing is, yeah, it's a broad definition of addiction. I would then kind of caveat that I feel like an addiction needs to have some kind of positive response in the brain. You need to have some kind of dopamine hit that keeps you doing it. Something that triggers the reward centers that force you to keep on doing it. Because then, by that same logic, like I said, people with OCD, their compulsions would then be addictions. And that's a murky area to kind of get into.
Mm.
You know? Back to Rat Park. This isn't necessarily saying that environment is the only factor. In fact, another study went to very great lengths to prove that it wasn't the case. They even got down to using the exact same breed of rat that were used in the initial experiment. So this was performed quite a few years later. This was in the 90s that they performed this. What they found was that there wasn't really a massive difference in morphine use between caged rats and rat park rats. In some cases, the morphine was used more by the rats in rat park, and in other cases it was used more by the caged rats. And what they kind of determined from this was that genetics came into play. Because the strain, the breed of rats that they used, while being as close as they could, were just slightly different. There was a different kind of breeding pool of the same breed of rats that they had had to use, because the previous breed of rats had kind of not been, they were no longer supplied by the supplier. Yeah. So obviously that means that addiction has a lot of different factors that contribute to it, which obviously it does, because everything is everything is complicated, even the simple things. So there's obviously a genetic component to addiction and not just environment, and obviously drugs themselves are a component to addiction, because it's much more easy to get addicted to heroin than it is to get addicted to something like wheat.
Wheat.
Ah, yeah.
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 But wheat's quite addictive.
Wheat.
I love bread.
Wheat is quite addictive.
Oh, wheat. No, it is, but it's the sugars in wheat.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, true.
I think the thing that worries me with that second experiment is that there is an awful lot of incentive on the part of governments, institutions, to continue to prove a connection between a drug and an addiction, because they get to continue locking people up, especially in America, where people in prison are put to slave labor. Mm. Like, and so my point being that it justifies two things. It justifies locking people up, and it justifies continually making something illegal, despite the fact that all evidence shows that making it illegal doesn't reduce use. And so, although I'm obviously, these scientists are trying to be objective, and I'll also try to be objective, if it's data that allows justification for things that don't actually work but are politically helpful for bad people, that's not something I would like to be amplifying.
So what the study is saying isn't that drugs are the sole kind of factor in addiction. It's kind of rallying against the rat park study, the initial rat park study, because it labeled environment as the sole contributor to addiction.
Yeah.
What it said was that if you take a rat out of a bad environment, there will be no addiction.
Yeah.
But we know that that isn't really true. That was the sole point. They were saying that genetics didn't have anything to play. They were saying that the drugs themselves had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
What this study is saying is that it's much more complex than just slap environmental on it.
Sure.
I
guess, and that's it solved.
All I'm trying to say is that I think that if you take a study that's essentially saying something very empowering and very good and leads to people in a population being treated better and made to be happier, if you take the conclusion of the Rat Park study, and essentially what it says is if you allow people to be happy and you increase their environmental conditions, then they motivate themselves towards good behavior. They don't need to be forced towards good behavior or punished for bad behavior. They just motivate themselves towards good behavior naturally. And so to come at that and go, I'm going to disprove that because I like that, to me is like, just prove something else, man. Don't like, I get it. I get that's what science does. It tries to, but they didn't try to replicate the results. They actively went, we're going to try and find the opposite conclusion.
Yeah, they did try and replicate the results. They couldn't replicate the results.
So that, right. But that sounded like you were trying to say that they went into it trying to disprove it.
I mean, you go into it. I mean, whether you're going to be an optimist or a pessimist going into it, you go in trying to replicate the results. Whether you want to or not, that's what you're trying to do. They couldn't do it. The reason they were trying to replicate the results was because there were a few issues with the original experiment. For one, the measures of the bottles, they broke at one point. So for a small period, they couldn't actually tell how much was being used from each from each water bottle by the groups. Another issue with the experiment was the fact that they put males and females together. Rats have sex a lot. There were new rats being made constantly, and nobody really knows, because it didn't say in the original paper, what was actually happening with those baby rats, whether they were being removed or whether they were being factored into the results.
Mm.
So this second experiment was not a case of, this is a really good conclusion, so I'm going to try and disprove it.
Right.
It was more, the methods of this are a little bit sketchy.
Sure.
Let's see if we can do it again.
Yeah, I guess I mean is that the criminalization of drugs has, and then the increasing of drug use and the war on drugs being useless has proven that punishing people for bad behavior doesn't motivate them away from the bad behavior.
Well, I think that looking at addiction as bad behavior is the issue, to be honest. You know.
Well, but it's bad behavior because it's illegal. Is what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's deemed to be bad behavior by the criminalization.
I'm not saying that you're saying that addiction is bad behavior, but look, the fact is that I don't think that second study is really saying that the war on drugs is a good thing. I think it's...
No, it just can be used as ammunition for people who want to continue to uphold the war on drugs in order to criminalize people.
Yeah, I think the conclusion of it being genetic is...
Yes, if you read it properly, then yes.
I think the conclusion of it being at least partially genetic is fully against the war on drugs. And I think it's a really important study when it comes to our understanding of addiction.
However, I believe there is a real-world analog of the Rat Park study, which I hinted at in the first few minutes, which is that there was, I think it's the Vietnam War.
I completely forgot to mention that. Yeah.
And so in the Vietnam War, I think it's Vietnam. Okay. Yeah. Loads of the soldiers were out in Vietnam and they got addicted to heroin. And they... were doing heroin there because there literally was nothing else to do. And they were just in a horrible place at war. They were in rat hell, right? And they came back from the Vietnam War, addicted to heroin, and something around... They went back into their lives with family.
Was about 95% of them.
Yeah. Oh, was it 95?
I think it was... I was watching a video recently. I think it was about 95%.
So they went back into, essentially, compared to where they were, rat heaven, where they have families, they have friends, they have freedom.
Sex.
And sex. And they, yeah, as Corey says, 95% of them got over their heroin addictions, which is like wild.
Whoa.
And so that, I think, is a real world analog of the Rat Park experiment, which wasn't even trying to be run. It was just naturally run.
Just naturally happened.
Yeah.
Well, that's conclusive in itself.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you look at the higher rates of drug use in poorer populations, it all feeds into that same argument that
rat hell.
Yeah. If you put someone in a bad position, they're going to do anything they can to get out of it. And if getting out of it means...
Get out of it in your head.
Yeah.
Not experience it for a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, then absolutely people will do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just makes sense. So in conclusion, addiction is complex and caused by many things. And that's the episode.
Not black and white.
It's not black and white. No, it's not.
Or that the government would like you to believe it's black and white.
I would just like to point out for everyone listening, that right now marijuana has been made legal in a number of US states. Yet there are still black people in jail for possession,
marijuana possession
of marijuana that are not being released and probably won't be released for quite a long time. And that's terrible and ridiculous.
You need to watch 13th on Netflix, which is basically about 13th. This. It says, 13th is a 2016 documentary film. The film explores intersection of race, justice, and mass incarceration in the United States. It's titled 13th after the 13th Amendment. And it's essentially about how in America... Well, I'll leave it to you. Watch 13th on Netflix. It's very good.
Ooh. That's your homework.
That's your homework.
Thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday, and why not leave us a nice wee review? If you'd like to support the show, you can donate to our Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys. You can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, or send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at Jamkin everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCupBoth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye. Bye.